Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. I'm going to go ahead and start the show by reading the intro I wrote for this podcast in the eighth inning of yesterday's game. Welcome to the August 2022 podcast, where it's August 2022 every day, and the Yankees are midway through a 4-14 stretch after an historic start. We can't have nice things. Let's start with the moment you were happiest against the Jays. Never. Not even for one fucking second. Moving on. Moment you were the angriest this week versus Toronto. Okay, now let's do the real podcast, as the Blue Jays just pulled the Yankees, aka winning the series, but losing the third game so bad that nobody remembers you even won the first two. Nice job, John Schneider. Nice job, Vlad Jr. Nice job, Hennessy Cabrera. Nice job, Eric Swanson. Great stuff, Toronto. The Yankees were going to have to lose the series eventually. They were, and they did in their sixth series of the year. They lost this one to Toronto, and it seemed like a four-game losing streak was afoot. And it seemed like all the early vibes had been extinguished. And it seemed like I was fending off the worst nonsense I've seen in months, if not years, in my mentions. For I was digging up box scores from 1999 because I was getting people going, man, I don't know. I watched the 90s Yankees, and I'm sorry. It just never felt this way. You never felt like a game was just over at 5-1 in the fifth. You just never felt that way. Spoiler alert, that's a you thing. If you never felt that way, I mean, I'm sure that you maybe never did feel that way, or you don't remember that you felt that way, but you probably did feel that way because you were pessimistic then and you're pessimistic now. That's on you. That has nothing to do with the compete level of the team. Even that game that I was getting messages inundating me claiming this is over after the fifth, they cut it from 5-1 to 5-4. Not over. They just didn't complete the rally. So you had me screenshotting, like, somebody was like, the 99 Yankees never would have lost to a mid-Blue Jays team like this. Okay, let me look up the 99 Yankees schedule. Oh, they lost 10-3 to an 8-games-under-500 Royals team in early May? All right, there's one. Happens. So they lose the first two. Things are getting disgusting. They're on the verge of losing the third one and getting swept. That's four in a row. Come home, face the Rays. Hey, guess what? I'm feeling dark too. I'm not feeling good. Because I've tried to defend the Yankees. And I was like, if you're checking out after a two-game losing streak, then you don't deserve to celebrate the wins. And of course, the Yankees make me look like an idiot because then they lose the next one. And then they're silent for the first eight innings of the third one. And I'm like, all right, hand up. Sorry, everybody who said the season was over was right. Well, you know, what are we doing here? I write that dark intro. Thomas Carinante, best rally of the year, best rally in like 3-4 years, best rally since 2019. Yeah. And that's saying a lot because there were some pretty great rallies in that Houston series. Houston is 6-14 now. I don't know how much longer we can tout that as a benchmark of human achievement, sweeping them. But pretty great rallies already for a Yankees team. If you want to nitpick, plenty of nitpicks, and we will do it, but that's the win of the year probably. And again, there were like five early contenders for that. So it's a big award to give the win of the year to yesterday's win. Big ass win. And one that, again, kind of invalidates the series loss. It's the best series loss possible.
Yeah.
What do you think of when you think of that series loss? The third game. You're not thinking of the first two. It's the Yankees. You pulled the Yankees, Toronto.
Welcome, Toronto. This is how it feels. But you guys know how it feels because you suck. The only reason you won the series is because we sucked more. Toronto did not play a good series in this. I don't care what anybody says. If you watch all the I watched all these games. I watched 27 innings. I very much regret it. This is why I take some days off during the season, because you cannot watch every single game and expect to survive or enjoy your life afterwards. But we'll get into that in a second. Let me hit you with DraftKings. DraftKings is here. They're always here. Yankees fans or anybody else in the chat, we might have some haters. Come on down. DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 bet on any sport to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. Instantly. And all you have to do is sign up with the code YanksGoYard. You will also receive one no-sweat single-game parlay every single day. The best part is that you will get both rewards even if your first bet loses. Please use the code YanksGoYard. It will not only get you these bonuses, but it will directly support our podcasts, Adam and Thomas, Yanks Go Yard. We're having a good time. Let's keep doing it. If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Yanks Go Yard to maximize your first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present, physically in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Yeah, a draining series. I would agree, though. I am happy that all that I remember about this series is the ninth inning comeback. The Yankees teased us with one on Tuesday night when they put it when they put the game within a run. Who was it, Alex Verdugo in that one? He hit a double in the ninth as well.
Yeah, and a productive out, which, you know, you can't argue with. But as soon as a productive out happened, you're like, well, they're not going to tie this game. And they didn't,
Trevino ground out, Oswaldo ended the game. Yeah.
Did I contradict myself right now by saying that I had given up that game early? No, I don't think so. I had. I was feeling pessimistic, and ultimately they did not win the baseball game. But if you want to tell me, like, hey, is it just me, or are these games just over after the fifth inning now? They cut it from 5-1 to 5-4. I don't know what you want me to tell you. It wasn't over. They lost. But if you want to say you feel like it's over mid-game, you didn't feel that during the dynasty. Again, that's a you problem. That's describing what you feel. And we're going to do plenty of work in this podcast in breaking down the holes in this team, because they are 1-3 in their last four. That's not as magical as 10-3. They're going to have to play a good series against the Rays at home this weekend, or else people are going to start to get loud. Sorry, you're going to have to win the John Sterling tribute game on Saturday. Gleyber Torres already come up in the comment section. We are not happy with him. Probably going to get most of our ire in this podcast. Anthony Volpe, terrible series. Aaron Judge, terrible series until the ninth inning of game three. Again, we're going to remember that, but we're not going to forget about the first two games and eight ninths either. They were really close to getting swept. And this was really close to being a dark podcast, so much so that I wrote it up. I wrote up the dark podcast, but it's not a dark podcast because the Blue Jays put a guy into a save situation for his 2024 regular season debut coming back from injury. And a lot of fun Blue Jays stuff there, too, of people being like, so you beat our beleaguered bullpen that's missing Chad Green and Jordan Romano. Good job. So you have bad bullpen depth? Is that what you're saying? Your bullpen depth wasn't good enough to hold a two-run lead against a slumping team that had borderline given up? I mean, what
exposed our weakness. You guys suck.
You beat our weakness. Yeah, you're supposed to beat our strength. What are you talking about? I mean, you lost. Your players weren't good enough, and they all choked in the eighth inning. It's a 4-1 game. Complete a sweep. We got on the Yankees for choking in the 10th inning of the Guardians series. They bad Volpe defense, bad Gleyber defense, and then, you choked yesterday. You could have swept. You didn't. So now we get to do a fun podcast. And I was looking around for Blue Jays streams yesterday. I couldn't find one. It was weird. They were live for the second game, but not the third one. That was weird because, you know, you had a chance to sweep. I mean, I feel like if we had a chance to sweep, we might go live for that one, and then you get to watch us on cam. But instead, we're wrapping it up today. I didn't listen to the Blue Jays wrap-up podcast. I probably should. Because I'm sure they had some interesting thoughts. I was yelling at John Schneider yesterday.
I hate him.
I was yelling at Shut Up Fat Boy yesterday because he was trying to get ejected to slow Clay Holmes' momentum in the ninth inning. In case you didn't pick up on that, didn't work. And I guess we can start with the ninth. I mean, we're going to do a breakdown like we have the last couple weeks, and we'll talk about Michael Kay and the cheating allegations. I don't know how we can't. We're going to do player we're angriest at, most surprising moment, thing you might have missed. But I think we just got to start with, you know, what made you happiest? The ninth inning, obviously. Biggest moments of the ninth inning. We'll break it down piece by piece. John Schneider had me going because he tries to get himself ejected on some strike called Vlad Jr. with two outs in the ninth. Clay Holmes rested Clay Holmes, humming 98. It wouldn't be a Yanks Go Yard podcast without focusing on the hater corner first. Like, obviously, what are the Yankees doing in the top of the ninth? Amazing thing after amazing thing. Feet of strength. That's the reason they win the game. I'm still thinking about the end of the game first because runner Kiermaier's on, one out. Volpe comes in and makes a great play on a chopper. on George Springer. That could have been fumbled.
Yep.
That could have been dropped. We could have runners on first and second, one out. Volpe makes a great play. John Schneider smells blood in the water at that point. Vladdy's up, takes a pitch at the bottom of the zone for strike one. He gets himself ejected because he's trying to throw Clay Holmes off. You can see Clay Holmes is in a rhythm. There's absolutely no way that John Schneider actually is dumb enough to think that the umpire is ripping him off.
Yeah.
In the ninth. There's no way, because on the broadcast, Michael Kay and John Flaherty, the least interesting commentator in the history of baseball, who dropped some real gems in this series. That's a long drive by Juan Soto. That one is gone. Yeah, okay. Great. Starts saying, you know, he disagreed with the strike zone in the top of the inning. I don't know how that's possible, because Juan Soto on a 3-1 pitch, Tim Mesa goes 6 inches below the zone and he gets that.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge on a one strike pitch, strike two is 6 inches in. And then the pitch Judge ultimately hits for the biggest hit of the game, biggest swing of the week, is another fastball in a similar spot, like 4 inches in, that he knows is going to get called because it just got called. So John Schneider is just doing more chicanery there. One last chance to mess with the Yankees after last year's just sheer brilliance of Aaron Judge is cheating because he looked at the dugout sideways, and we should hit him in the head, as the Blue Jays pregame show said the next day, and the coaches can't stand there. They got to stand in their boxes if they're the Yankees coaches, but not if they're my coaches. My coaches don't have to stand in the boxes, but the Yankees coaches do. Just clown, foolish behavior from someone who's supposedly a leader of men and a boss of younger great influence on the younger generation. And again, you know, I'm calling him Fat Boy. When the game ends on Volpe's brilliant defensive play, I'm like, nice one, Fat Boy. Nice one, Fat Boy. And my wife in the other room goes, you fat shaming? Like, no, you know, I mean, yeah, kind of. I mean, Vlad is sort of overweight, and it's actually ironic.
You wouldn't get it.
Blue Jays have a lot of overweight guys, so it does seem like we are. But no, it's actually like a 46-year-old man was a toddler last year and fat shamed a Yankees coach. So I'm only going to use that when I get to throw it back at him. I never thought in a million years that anyone would eclipse Alex Cora or that any roster would eclipse the Red Sox roster. But here we are. The Red Sox roster has like two hateable players. Cora seems lost every time he gives a press conference. He's like, they won't do anything. They don't do what I tell them. I don't get it. So Cora now sort of a sad figure. Seems like he's going to be leaving Boston after this year. Fingers crossed. Hope so. And John Schneider just infinitely more hateable at this point. It's wild. If the teams actually were to match up on the field, I'm still rooting for the Blue Jays. I can't stop. I can't break myself of rooting against the Red Sox. But Blue Jays roster is much more detestable at this point. John Schneider is much more of an enemy. Although I don't even want to dignify him with that. I don't want to give him that honor. I don't want to be like, I actually hate you or care about you. I want to give him the Don Draper. I don't think about you at all, because I rarely think about the Blue Jays at all. He tried. Really tried in this series, and man, he came up short.
Yeah, the reason I think he's more hateable at this point is because he's not good. He's not good. The Blue Jays are regressing. You look at the managerial decision yesterday. You look at the tactics. You look at the trash talking. Like, even if he was looking to throw Clay Holmes's timing off yesterday, I didn't see an instance at all where he was yelling at the umps. The ump was calling yesterday's game terribly for both teams. I'll be the first one to say that. Yeah, obviously we'll get a little bit pissed off about the ninth inning, because that's where we need to. That's where we're staging the comeback, and you get the really bad calls on Soto and Judge. But that was happening all game.
Yeah,
the guy was missing the plate all game.
There's a great one where Stroman really needed a strike, hit the top of the zone with a breaker, and Kay said something like, just missed on that one. And Flaherty was like, he actually didn't miss, but okay, or whatever. You're like, just going off. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a poorly umpired game, in the fact that there was, you know, at least from our perspective, watching the broadcast, usually the cameras will go in there and you see Booney chirping from time to time. You see other managers chirping from time to time, and they'll show that for sure. Didn't see that once, despite this game being out of control since inning one. And then he didn't even get his money's worth. He just went up to the umpire and essentially told him to fuck off and then walked away. And it was like, that's it.
Yeah.
It's just such hard-o energy, man. And it's so sad to watch it, because the hard-o energy when your team is actually good is really like insufferable, and you can't stand it as an opposing fan. Correct. But it's even worse when you are doing it to no success rate. Again, the Blue Jays, no success since he's taken over as manager. They thought he was going to be, kind of the game changer after Charlie Montoyo, and they fired Montoyo after, like, it was like 2 months into the season, right? 2 years.
Yeah, it made no sense. He had had success there too. We're going to silently do this. Sorry.
Yeah. And he was dubbed the player's manager, which, I mean, now I'm thankful that that's not our player's manager. Like, Aaron Boone looks like the best player's manager ever alongside John Schneider. And it's just the manner in which he conducts himself. It's embarrassing. It's just frat. It's like freshman year frat, like when all these guys are trying to fit in and make an impression. And it's like, dude, you've been here for a while now. Let's tone it down and act like an adult, or like have some tact.
He's the guy in the frat framed photo on the wall that for picture day wears like a cop outfit or something, not a gorilla suit or just something not funny at all. And then like at 20 years later at the reunion, all the friends are kind of looking at it cockeyed, like, man, it's gonna be there forever. Like, man, you were a loser when you bid. You were actually a big loser. Like, very cool. Guy with a water gun or something. Isn't that funny? No, not really. Kind of disruptive.
Like, come to think of it, we only actually accepted you because you threw up a lot after that one beer bong, and it was kind of funny.
And your dad worked for American Express.
But either way, I mean, like, I can't stand this team. They challenged the first play of the game. I mean, just fuck off. I know, I understand it got overturned, but just fuck off. Challenging the first play of the game. Clip that. I don't care. That pissed me off to no end.
Who cares? Clip whatever you want to clip.
I just don't like it's. I'm done. It's so infuriating facing this team. And the fact that, like, the reason why, again, I was the most upset with this series was because the Yankees sucked. Fine. The Yankees do go in stretches of sucking, and that's life with this team. But not only that, the Blue Jays were equally as bad. They had a couple of breaks go their way, which changed the complexion of the first two games, and that was it. The Yankees did nothing in the first two games, and the Blue Jays got, you know, a D-plus on the test to get to the next course, and that was how they got by. And we're the laughing stock, and we're overlooking all these Blue Jays deficiencies. But now we can talk about them because they ended up blowing the series in spectacular fashion. And they can't even think about a series win. Now they have to go to San Diego. The Padres are looking pretty damn good. Or is San Diego coming to them? No, I think they're going to San Diego.
Well, we got to find out for sure, though, because if San Diego's coming into Toronto, Toronto's winning the series. But if Toronto's going to San Diego, then Toronto might struggle offensively because they don't have their Magic Rogers Center renovation secret camera.
Toronto is going to San Diego.
So that'll be, I bet, we're going to need the, we'll check out the evidence after this one and see if the offense decreases. We gotta talk about that because it's very funny to me. Full disclosure, I do not think that the Toronto Blue Jays are cheating using cameras or microphones or megaphones or a system of banging poutines to communicate signals. I'm pretty confident that 27 foul balls against Carlos Rodon is not a mark of a cheating enterprise. I think they were just able to solve Rodon's two-pitch mix. Again, the fastball is 98. Rodon was throwing heat, but he was getting fouled off constantly, unable to finish off anybody. The slider was weirdly the best it's been, according to the metrics. He started using it more as the game went on, sort of abandoned the changeup. Hey, it is what it is. Jays looked frisky offensively, but not good offensively. Like Dalton Varsho homering, I guess. Maybe you do have to cheat and steal signs for Dalton Varsho to homer twice. But I would say no. At no point during this series was I like, huh, the Blue Jays had a makeover after 10 games. They must have some cheating scheme. But Michael Kay yesterday on the broadcast in the third inning says, John Flaherty starts it. He says, quote, "We've seen it for 2 days. They've been grinding through at-bats." Kay responds, "You know what's curious to me, though, John? we just saw the Blue Jays in the Bronx, and what we watched was a completely different team than the one we've seen in Toronto. Mm-hmm. The one in New York did not foul off the amount of pitches that this team does. It's like it's a different team in this ballpark. Now, home field advantage, there is something to that, but why would it manifest itself in the ability to foul off tough pitches? We know what Kay wanted to say. Kay pretty much said it. I don't think that the Blue Jays – he also noted, hey, they were on an early road trip so that they could finish up the renovations to the Rogers Center, which looked beautiful, by the way. There's now – I don't know if you noticed this, Thomas. There's a much clearer view from center field, from the restaurant. It's actually way easier if you want to sneak a Nikon in there or some spyware, or if you just want to enjoy a nice meal. No, I don't think the Toronto Blue Jays are cheating. But, yes, I think that starting a funny, petty, cheating rumor on the broadcast is some pretty nice payback – for the gibberish, petty Aaron Judge cheating rumor that they wasted our time with for a three-game series last May. So real hell no, the Blue Jays are not cheating at home, unless they are, in which case clip only the end part where I say that they are and not the part where I say that they weren't. But revenge is a dish best served cold. Revenge is a dish best served a year after you wasted 3 days of our lives with cheating allegations that were completely unsubstantiated. So we're going to give it right back to you. And then also, we're going to snatch your lunch money in the ninth inning just for safe measure to make sure that you go out with your tail between your legs as much as possible. So I enjoyed the hell out of it. And yeah, I mean, I don't think that Michael Kay was spitting facts, but I think Michael Kay was having a little fun.
I think so too. And the funniest part was that he's, you know, all but accusing them of cheating. And what they do this series, they scored 12. They scored, they scored 12 runs, mm-hmm. averaged 4 runs a game. Mm-hmm. There was nothing spectacular.
They were early yesterday, something like 4 for 23 with runners in scoring position, which I would classify.
They finished. Oh, that was my stat for later. You fuck.
Ooh,
I'm just kidding. 4 for 31, but we'll get there.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
You look at the totality of the series, right? Marcus Stroman kind of beat them. You know, that's a quality start from, what was it, six innings, 2 earned. Mm-hmm. Luis Gil, in my opinion, should have been out after 2 1/3 innings. Mm-hmm. They gave him life and allowed him to pitch 5 innings. That was the worst start that – first of all, it was a unique box score out of the 1.1 million pitching lines in MLB history. There has never been somebody in MLB history – who had pitched 5 innings, given up 3 earned runs on 3 hits, 7 walks, and 6 strikeouts. 7 walks. His whip was a 2 in this one, and he almost ended up with a quality start. And then you go back to the Rodon start, too. Like, they fouled off 27 pitches in this one. They made Carlos Rodon work, which you got to give them credit for, but they almost lost the game. Rodon only gave up 3 earned runs in 4 innings. Like, again, not a good start, but he battled and ended up finishing 4 full innings. It was over 100 pitches, and I don't think that that was his fault. I thought the command was good. I thought the pitch mix was solid. The Blue Jays were just on top of stuff. So in theory, if the Blue Jays were cheating, they ended up just fouling off a bunch of pitches and working a bunch of walks and not scoring any runs. Great job, guys. Awesome.
Yeah. Forgot to cheat once runners got on scoring position.
Which like, is when the runners are on. How do we cheat now?
Yeah. Oh my God, we forgot. It's a signal in the bases. I think that's what it is. Because if a runner's on the base, they can't see whatever camera's flashing on the base. But if nobody's on, then they know. Grab that poutine. Grab the Timbits. I mean, the top. We'll talk. Let's break down the ninth a little bit though, because this was really a miracle rally.
It was
that was able to. And I'm going to go ahead and say, I'll save that for my moment that we might have missed later. But 4-1 in the eighth, Juan Soto hits a baseball a million feet, and I'm still kind of like, I mean, that's nice. I'm glad Juan Soto's getting closer to Tyler O'Neill in the MLB home run lead. But other than that, I don't really foresee a comeback. First batter of the ninth, stand just shits on a baseball. And I was kind of like, awesome. You know what? Okay. Yeah. I mean, you have my attention. That ended up being 111 mile an hour home run, 437 feet, which again, I don't know how that's not 554 feet.
How?
That's the furthest baseball possible that you can hit. But okay. I mean, sure. 437, give it to me.
When the camera loses itself like that, it's 500 feet.
The Soto one too, they just like, I was like, I think that's gone. And then they focused on the right fielder just sort of milling up. You know, when you had a kid in Little League who like wasn't engaged and would start throwing his glove in the air, it was like the right fielder in during play is kind of just kicking grass and picking dandelions. That's how you know it's gone. And so that home run, and then, and hey, we're going to crap on him a little bit later, but Gleyber Torres keeps in and going with a single.
Yes.
If not for that, you need to restart the rally. Home runs are great.
Yep.
But you need rally to restart the rally. Torres gets on base. Alex Verdugo gets on base. Earns his dog badge back. I revoked his dog badge at one point because he didn't run to first again on a hard liner that was knocked down. And then they do the flip to first. It was like a miracle defensive play the day before. You get your dog badge revoked. I'm sorry. If you're not hustling to first twice in three games, that's not what a dog would do. Woof. In fact, woof. It's kind of a woof if you don't do that. But he goes down, gets that double after almost homering in the ninth the day before, digging one out, low and in, doubles into the corner. This time he almost gets one past Springer, almost ties the game. We stick second and third. It's smart. Oswaldo chops one a second. Not great. Jose Trevino pinch hit. Great job against Tim Meza. Ties the game with a single. They hold the runner again. Volpe pops out. Now we get to the crucial, the nitty gritty, because we get the Sal Licata Juan Soto walk.
Oh, baby.
Juan Soto sees one strike in the at-bat, even though another strike was called low, but there was not a pitch there. There was one pitch that leaked out over the zone. But again, I'm sorry. I don't want Juan Soto swinging out of his shoes on 1-0.
Nope.
I want Juan Soto taking that at-bat, dictating it. He dictates it. They give him nothing to hit. They pitch around him, basically, because they want to get to Aaron Judge, which this team's going to go anywhere. At a certain point, Aaron Judge has to prove that that is not a viable strategy. And so far, two chances with the bases loaded in the ninth. This week, 50%, not bad. 50%, not bad.
We'll
Didn't deliver
it.
The first time, delivered the set. Almost just missed one the first time.
Yeah.
He's been just missing a lot. 3-2 pitch here, deposits it down the line. It should be 7-4. Should have cleared the bases.
Yeah.
Kicked off the sidewall, made the ninth inning a little hairier than it should have been. But that's an incredible rally. That's as good as it gets. That's the kind of thing where you just sort of have to tip your cap and say, I didn't see it coming. I don't know if you saw it coming. I certainly did not. But you just have to tip your cap and say, all right, okay, that's really about as good a win as you can have. And again, first two games in this series, foul ball is very annoying. Michael Cade, cheating allegations, what have you. I remember the third one. I think a lot of – there's a Yankees classic in this series. I'm not going to remember the first two losses.
No. The comeback there felt like the moment Stanton homered that it was on. And I will give you're right. We got to give credit to Gleyber Torres for that single, because how many times, I think we talked about an episode or two ago, how many times did the Yankees, oh yeah, we talked about it on Monday because of the two runs they scored in extras right off the bat against the Guardians. And then they just fucking go down in order. And it's like, what, why are we not riding the momentum? Once they cash in, it's like everybody's like, yep, all right, job is done. Let's get to the next half of the frame and see what happens. It's like, no, you have to pile on, especially with, you know, extra innings on the horizon, a la Sunday's game, or with the bullpen, which has been a little bit shaky coming in to face the heart of the order.
Did you see the Orioles at Fenway the other day? They obviously get the ghost runner and extras. Gunnar Henderson homers into the monster to start the inning, 6-4. All right, I mean, you could pack it in. You could just hope for holding a two-run lead. Even if you give up one home run in the bottom of the inning, the game's tied. You could just stop, I guess. Yeah. But the O's keep going, get more and more guys on. Colton Cowser gets a 3-0 pitch inside and tattoos that one out. It's 9-4, and now the game, for all intents and purposes,
done.
Has ended. You do have to pile on.
Of course you have to pile on, especially, you know, when you're on the road, you have the advantage in the top half of the inning. And in the Yankees case, I know it wasn't extras, but they had the advantage in the top half of the ninth. They had gotten the momentum. They had the runners on. They needed to do the damage. they did what they could. You know, at that point, you wanted the extra run, not going to complain. But Gleyber Torres getting that single really helped things out, because so often, again, the offense just dies after a big hit like that. The way that the resilience for the bottom of the lineup, once again, like, I'm coming out of this series and I'm sitting there and I'm like, great, our two best players right now are Juan Soto and Oswaldo Cabrera. Oswaldo Cabrera has been giving great at bats. He's catching up to fastballs, whether he's fouling them off or he's putting them in play. And the pinch hit there, got to give it to Booney. Pinch hitting for Austin Wells and bringing in Trevino, who has quite honestly been on fire since over the weekend. We weren't getting on Trevino, I would say, but you know, I think that time has come for Austin Wells to probably get his shot. Trevino is defense first, tremendous backup catcher, tremendous defensive catcher, tremendous game manager, which has value in the dugout, just not on an everyday basis. But guess what? Booney rode the hot hand. I know that the Blue Jays were going to a lefty anyway, so it made the decision a little bit easier. But he acted quick, and that was that. Trevino singles to, that was the game time run, right? Then we have the Soto walk. Sorry, Sal. Again, the energy with which Soto comes to the plate, I think, has a ton of value, because the whole thing that we have talked about for this acquisition, right, was the Soto Judge dynamic, whether who was batting first or who was protecting who. You had to face the next guy no matter what, and you couldn't walk him. So Juan Soto, for the second time, loads the bases with a walk. Nowhere to put Aaron Judge. You have to pitch to Aaron Judge. Not only that, but Soto is literally shit-talking the pitcher both times in these situations, staring him down, shaking his head no. No, that's not a strike. Sorry. Look who's coming up. You're going to have to throw him strikes now if you wanted to avoid me. And that has intangible value, because the Yankees never act like this. They never have the guy who's willing to back up the confidence with some trash talk. You've seen so many times in recent years where the trash talk has blown up in their face because they don't really double down on it. They don't really dig their heels into the ground. They just like offhandedly talk some trash, and then it more times than not exposes them for disappointment or for failure. Juan Soto is backing it up every which way. And finally, we see, not finally, we're fucking 19 games into the season.
Baby. Yeah.
We see it come to fruition in the situation where, great, you don't want to pitch to me? Then pitch to this guy. He's coming up right now. He might be slumping, but you still have to throw him a strike, because if you walk him, you're losing the game. You're gonna relinquish the lead. So Judge rips one. Judge needed that really, really badly. And again, props to John Schneider for the bizarre bullpen management. But again, like, Blue Jays fans are going to complain about that. Like, in theory, Swanson's your best reliever, right? Swanson's the best reliever. He came in for the save.
Yeah, Swanson, yeah. Or Romano. Like, if Romano's down, then Swanson is an all-star caliber reliever who that's another fun, like, look, you bring him in, and I get being skittish about it, but it's such a lame.
The Yankees aren't hitting, so, like, what do you want?
It's such a lame pre-excuse to be like, it's not fair to debut him for the season in high leverage. If he's on the roster, he's presumably healthy, right? So it's not fair to ask him to protect a two-run lead against a team that's maybe given up. It seems pretty fair to me. He's a high leverage reliever, and then he comes in and he doesn't have it. If he's not healthy, he should not be out there and active. Don't tell me retroactively, you can't use one of your best relievers in a two-run game. Everybody knows that. What? I mean, because he blew it. And his location was terrible, and his stuff was flat.
Yeah.
But that's one of your guys. If he's active, then that's who I'd want in there closing the game. What? I'm bringing in Mesa to start the inning. Hennessy's Cabrera going four. Like, what? Yimmy on three. Well, I don't know. Hey, whatever. You know, revisionist history you want to do, Toronto.
Facing batters in this game, by the way, brought them in for guys who have not gotten a hit in this game. Giancarlo Stanton was 0-for-2 with a walk. Gleyber Torres was 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts.
Worst player on the team. Yeah.
Alex Verdugo 0-for-3 with a strikeout. So in theory, that's the best case high leverage situation. You could bring a reliever who is coming off an injury and needs reps in game and in real game time and needs the high leverage reps, this is perfect, a good layup. Should be a layup. The Yankees were not hitting in the series. They were not getting clutch hits. They were not hitting with runners in scoring position. They were not really homering. So it was like, okay, here we go. And it burned them. And then the Blue Jays, you know, Blue Jays fans, obviously, if Aaron Boone did that to blow a series where we were up, you know, two games to none, going for the sweep, had them on the ropes, I'm sure we'd have something to say about it. But if we took a breath and stepped back and be like, all right, well, what are the other options? Use somebody who's exhausted, put the bullpen in peril for the next series after having to use a ton of guys because Luis Gil and Carlos Rodon weren't able to get, you know, get through six innings in their starts, which changes kind of the whole dynamic. So I don't know. If I'm a Blue Jays fan, I'm chalking it up to bad luck. I'm not blaming John Schneider, even though he is a huge ass.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately end of day, you took two out of three. You can go home and say you took a series from a division or a first place team right now. Yep. That's fine for you. You had some house money. You tried it. Your bullpen failed. I don't know. I'm a little concerned about Swanson, concerned about Chad Green with the sore shoulder. You probably should be, but you tried. I think the Yankees tried to close the game with Caleb Ferguson the other day because they were out of guys. It didn't work. But I'm not like, you know, obviously in retrospect, yeah, I'd rather have Luis Gil closing that game. I'd rather win. So after they lose, I'm like, oh, I can't believe they actually went with Ferguson. I would have gone with these three guys. Okay, sure. I mean, yes. I would love to win. And in my dream world, the guys I brought in won the game. And then I'm the hero. And then I win a pizza party and the mayor gives me the key to the city. And guess what? A beautiful model wants my phone number. I mean, cool. Cool. But what actually happened is he used one of his top high leverage relievers who blew it. So let's get angry for a little bit. We're talking about what he brought in to face these hitless guys. Gleyber Torres, kudos for the hit, starting the rally. But if you need somebody to get right, you're going to bring somebody in against Gleyber Torres right now. And that's also the player I was the angriest with by far in this series. And the player I've been angriest with so far this season, their 19th game yesterday. Mm. And in that at-bat, when the stat line flashed for Gleyber Torres, 197 with no homers and two RBI, it's not the first series of the year anymore. This is a prime time. This is their second best hitter last year. And he's been a non-entity offensively. He has not made the easy plays defensively. And he has made some easy plays look hard. That double play that Joel Sherman got on him for throwing away against the Guardians, he called it Gleyber Torres fantasy camp. And I thought that was extremely accurate and a great way to assess it. You can't take the easy plays and make them hard, especially if you're going to bungle the easy plays too. Style, all like Sherman said, home run, bat flip it. Ball in play, get the out.
Yeah.
Get the out. Just get the out. And he has been in his head all year long, which is crazy to me because him and Juan Soto are buddy-buddy. They're landing late night. They're getting meals. They're going to get haircuts. Shouldn't he be so comfortable entering his walk year? Shouldn't Soto be making him more comfortable? Shouldn't Soto be talking him through a walk year, what he can expect in free agency? He wants to be a Yankee for life. Maybe he will be. But so far, so bad. He probably a 30% chance of an extension on opening day that's now down to like 10 or 5. If he wants to stay here, he's got to figure it out. This is very reminiscent of post-2022 trade deadline malaise for Gleyber Torres. And he's not a leadoff hitter. And right now he's not a six hitter. So they don't have enough depth to bench him for a day or so. He can't clear his head. He's just out there. And he can't be hitting 190 with no power and no defense. Sorry.
Yeah. I need him gone. I'm sorry. I'm just taking the stance now. Tweeted yesterday. I had a hell of a tweet storm yesterday because the first 26 innings of this series was misery. And then, of course, all negated in the final inning of the three-game set. But I can't stand to watch him anymore. You have the defensive nonsense. The bat is he is so overmatched at the plate. And to be overmatched at the plate – in what's supposed to be the prime of your career on the best roster you're ever going to be on, probably. Like, I don't even think that's being, unless the Dodgers were to trade for him or the Dodgers were to sign him next offseason, like, it's unacceptable. For the fact that it's happening this early when he's had a clean slate, He was able to have a full offseason. There were no trade rumor nonsense. Like, it's unwatchable. I don't want him on the team anymore. I don't care what anybody has to say about that. If he's not being extended, there's little to no value of him being here. I'd rather have somebody batting in the ninth spot, hitting 203, and only getting singles, and playing staunch defense than what Gleyber Torres has to offer at this point. That said, I don't know. Well, this will be mean. I don't want to be mean in what I say, but I can't stand to watch Anthony Rizzo anymore. 1-for-13 with 5 strikeouts in this series. I know he got robbed twice. He got robbed twice in game 2.
He got Varshowed.
Yeah, diving plays by Davis Schneider and Varsho. So there was some good contact made, but I just, again, another error in this series on a weak chopper. That was maybe spinning weird, but why am I even like, it doesn't matter. It's a ground ball to first base. Field the ball. Stop strike. Like, he can't catch up to fastballs anymore. It's like he's swinging through everything. And if he's actually injured, then I take back everything that I said. If the cognitive impairment is still affecting him, I take back everything I said. But for the love of God, if that is what's happening, get off the field. Get off the field if you're incapable of playing. His stats in the early going are not that. I mean, they're not like. I mean, they're kind of unforgivable. He's slugging 307, which can't happen. Again, if you're protected in this lineup by Aaron Judge or Juan Soto or Giancarlo Stanton, whatever the construction of the lineup is, Anthony Rizzo is in a very good spot. Even the walks aren't there. OBP of 313, like. And he's hitting 240. Something's got to change here. He's had one meaningful offensive contribution and a win, and it was that two-run homer that he hit against the Jays a week and a half ago in the 9-8 win where the Yankees almost blew it, and the two-run homer actually ended up being meaningful, but the Yankees were up 9-2 at some point, so yes. It shouldn't have been. The extra innings hit against the Guardians, the Yankees lose that game, so it ends up not really counting for anything. But – yeah, I don't know what's going on with him. I need it to be injury related so I don't have crazy outbursts, but that is by far the player I'm most frustrated with right now, especially after watching that series.
I mean, just so that we're clear, like, I know a lot of people know about Ben Rice, but did you know that there is a 6'5", 225-pound lefty swinging first baseman currently at AAA with a 1.339 AAA OPS and a 905 OPS on the year hitting 371? Named TJ Rumfield.
Did we he is.
We all know that. And did we also know that, hey, if you want a Gleyber Torres alternative, who's just an infielder who gets hits and makes plays, we got a shortstop at AAA who's hitting 305 with a 440 OBP and a 932 OPS, stuck around big league camp pretty long this year. You might know him. His name's Caleb Durbin. He was just on the podcast. So there's guys who can vary the look of the lineup for sure.
Striking out in almost half your at-bats in the series. I understand that there were some good Blue Jays pitchers here. You had Chris Bassitt, but
Kevin Gausman throwing 90 in his previous starts and then throwing 98 yesterday. Don't think I forgot about that just because we won. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Kevin Gausman, though, I will say it was only a matter of time. Kevin Gausman's a very good pitcher. The season that he started, you know, the way that he started the season is not really characteristic of him.
But he had a bum shoulder. So, like, it's only a matter of time, I would say, if he gets 2 months off and he gets to rehab. The fact that start to start, he's throwing 90 and then he's throwing 98 against us. Like, oh, my shoulder's not bum anymore. I remembered how to do velocity. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Overall, like, they threw good – Kikuchi kicks our ass, but again, you saw Kikuchi already this year, and you would think the game planning would go differently. It did not. 6 shutout innings, 9 strikeouts. Chris Bassitt usually gets rocked against lefty-heavy lineups, which the Yankees rolled out with, and could the lefties have been any less effective in that one? Juan Soto 0-for-3, Anthony Rizzo 0-for-4, Alex Verdugo 1-for-3, Oswaldo Cabrera 1-for-3, Austin Wells 0-for-3, Trent Grisham 0-for-2. But Anthony Rizzo is supposed to be probably the top echelon of that. It's supposed to be Soto Rizzo. And again, not doing anything. So I hope nothing's wrong. If something is, please go on the IL. Same goes for potential Aaron Judge injury. I'm not going to forget about the awful series Aaron Judge had before that game-winning hit. That's just being delusional. Aaron Judge has not been himself this season. It's the worst batting average he's ever had to start a year. Something is up. Again, he's protected by Juan Soto. He should be seeing more pitches. He should be more aggressive in the box. He should be on top of fastballs. None of that is happening. So something's up. I want to stay on top of it. Don't want to forget about it. But yeah, really frustrating stuff. And again, the runners in scoring position problem persists yet again. You go 2-4-12 in the first two games. And then you are 1-4-9 before the two hits with runners in scoring position in the ninth inning. So in totality, you're 3-for-19 going into the last inning yesterday. It's got to stop. Has to stop. Well, you don't have to bat 300 with runners in scoring position. It just can't be 100 or less.
It feeds right into your thing you might have missed, though, because the only reason that we get out of this alive is
Blue Jays going 4-for-31 with runners in scoring position. They went 0-for-8 yesterday, which essentially gifted us the win. They went 3-for-13 the night that they almost blew it to us on Tuesday. And then they went 1-for-10 on Monday, where you're sitting there and you were like, how can the Yankees not capitalize on one opportunity here? And the Yankees had five opportunities to capitalize. And guess what? The only person who did was Oswaldo Cabrera. Yet again, the only guy who's seemingly doing, you know, outside of Juan Soto, the guy who's seemingly consistently the only person doing stuff. Right now, Giancarlo Stanton has come alive. Got to give him props. That home run started the rally. He's been getting hits. He's been certainly putting forth a lot better at-bats after those first two bad series of the year. But yeah, the Blue Jays very much not good in this series. And the fact that the Yankees had walked them 19 times in the series, 15 times in the first two games. Blue Jays fans are really going to talk shit after winning the series? Like, I would just take the money and run at this point. You're at the casino. You got lucky with a couple of blackjacks. Leave. You're up a couple hundred. Get out. You're not playing good. Playing very bad. And now you're going to the West Coast? I don't know. The moral of the story here for me was that the Yankees lost this series because they played the worst possible baseball they could. And there was a razor, razor thin margin for error for the Blue Jays in all of these games. So again, not scared of this team. That's my thesis.
Not scared right now. And I'm going to give the moment you might have missed to somebody who just deserves a little bit more of a personal hat tip. Juan Soto in the post game of game three, crediting Stanton for starting the rally, saying that the Stanton home run was the moment that the team really got ignited. That's noble, but Juan, Beautiful. You homered in the eighth to make it 4-2. That was kind of the moment that really closed the gap a little bit. If you want to give Stanton credit for starting the ninth, sure, but don't forget about yourself. It just proved what a great teammate he is already, and I'm going to go ahead and say nice.
Imagine if he was like, I would say Giancarlo Stanton's homer was the momentum turner, but I fucking homered in the eighth.
Everybody knows it was me, right? Like, you guys remember it was me? Look, nothing perfect. Not a perfect team. Team that's lost 3 out of 4. Team that needed to pick me up. Team that needed to get its ass kicked yesterday and did. The pitching, the bullpen not there. Need swing and miss. We detailed that. Comments saying we need pitching. Of course we do. We need guys who can go more than 5 innings. We need Garrett Cole. We need a starter at the deadline. This team's not done, but they have banked 13 wins. Not bad. They have banked 13 wins against high-level competition. Not bad. Now they move forward with probably a different roster midseason, probably a different roster in August, and they hope to fill more gaps. They're going to call some guys up. Will Warren's going to get a chance. Yoandrés Gómez is going to get a chance.
Yeah.
Chase Hampton not going to get a chance because I guess he has a UCL sprain and shoulder problems that no one's talking about. But there's some other guys who are going to get a shot here. And so let's see what the Yankees can do as they keep going to the minors. Cody Poteet, would like to see him again. Interesting series. We come home and now face the Rays 4-3. And then the Oakland A's come to town, who've been a little bit better than they've gotten credit for this year, surprisingly. I know. But treat those like baseball games. Try to win games. It's not, you know, we're not, it's not a walkover midweek. You're going to have to try. You're going to have to try. They have a closer who throws 104. You're going to have to try. Before we sign off, John Sterling.
Sad.
Can't do the episode. It would be disingenuous to do the episode without talking about John Sterling and his abrupt retirement. He has already called his final game. Saturday will be the retirement ceremony pregame. I'm sure he will get choked up every time he talks to anyone. All he does is mention how kind everyone was to him and has always been to him. He is Yankees baseball. He's the fabric of Yankees baseball, especially for this generation. Right before we grew up, there was Phil Rizzuto. We didn't have him. We had John Sterling. If you hate John Sterling, you hate bombast, it's because you don't like the New York Yankees. We just did this on an episode a couple weeks ago. The Yankees win, you don't like that because it means the Yankees won.
Yeah.
I get it. You're not supposed to like it, actually, though. It's not for you. It's for us. Were we annoyed at John Sterling sometimes when he called a home run or prematurely and it was a double? Yeah. It's not great, but he was the voice. He was the team. You can get on him. No one is going to say John Sterling was perfect. John Sterling was a perfect quirk, like an ideal little wrench to throw. And by the way, everybody who bagged on John Sterling, as soon as they bring in a replacement for John Sterling and it's kind of a generic guy, everyone who bagged on John Sterling for being weird is going to bag on that guy for being boring.
Yep.
And they're going to be like, the Yankees are so cookie cutter, so businesslike. They're so, of course, the Yankees announcer is just this dude. And they're going to ignore that for 35 years they shit on John Sterling for singing show tunes and being interesting in the booth.
Yeah.
Because they're going to crap on the Yankees for whatever they do. John Sterling is not the best of all time. No one's doing announcer rankings, but perfect Yankees announcer. Meant something to us, meant more to us than he meant to you. And we'll miss him. And he's already done his final home run call. And fittingly, it was the weird one. It was John Sterling doing Giancarlo Stanton, known Demento car. That ball went very far, Giancarlo, which is one of his worst. It's crazy that's what he settled on for a high-profile acquisition. Like, Stanton, that trade was seismic, and he's known for A-bomb and Thrill of By Godzilla and Bernie Goes Boom. And Stanton comes in, he's got I Know Just the Thing, a song that no one remembers. And that's why John Sterling was the best. So he goes out with a very strange call. But what's your favorite Sterling call? Do you have one that you love more than the rest?
I actually don't. I thought the home run calls were cheesy, and it's nothing against John Sterling. I know
nothing against. Yeah. You don't have to love them. Yeah,
there was never a time where I listened to the broadcast because I listen to radio. There was one year I only listened to games on radio. And I, you know, when I used to drive a lot, all I would do was listen to Yankee games on radio. There was never a time where I would be like, "That's the call." I would just be like, "Oh, what's the call today?" And like, didn't really care. Didn't latch on to any of it. It was weird. Whenever we acquired a player, someone was like, "Oh, wonder what John Sterling's home run call is going to be for him." And I was like, "I don't care." For me, John Sterling's value was keeping me engaged, keeping me awake. Great voice, great flow to the broadcast. Not comparing him to Vin Scully, but Vin Scully-esque on the next tier. Had a career spanning 35 years, 36 years, very good at his job. I would implore any of you to have a career for longer than 5 years and be good at what you do. It's hard to do. So anybody bagging on John Sterling is obviously A, not a Yankees fan, B, unsuccessful in their own right, and C, sad person. John Sterling, especially towards the end of his career, he's an old man. He's a literal senior citizen. Still had the energy to go to the fucking ballpark every day. Still had the energy to fill the gaps in the book. It is hard to entertain people via radio. The way that you need to entertain via radio is you need to paint them a picture. You need to have them use their imagination to wonder what's going on. John Sterling did a great job of that. John Sterling was one of the best to ever do that. So that's where my value comes in with him. He kept me awake. He kept me engaged. I always knew what was going on. I never missed a beat during any of the games that I listened to, and I listened to quite a few. So I know that doesn't directly answer the question, but there's a different level of appreciation for me when I'm listening to radio broadcasts. And I think that often got overlooked because someone would clip him thinking a double was a home run or a cheesy home run call, and that they would try to define John Sterling by that. And it's like, how about you listen to, you know, before the pitch clock was here, these games would go on for fucking 3-4 hours, 3.5 hours. His job was to entertain people via radio. He was one of the most famous to ever do it. And he did it. It wasn't just because he was in the New York market. Don't forget that. If you're in the New York market, the turnover here, if you suck, is much quicker. They'll find a new radio person in 2 years. They don't give a shit. And we're going to see what happens with the next person. But again, props to John Sterling. I don't know who, I mean, the only other substitute in my mind to, you know, have someone calling radio broadcasts for the last 35 years would be Vin Scully. I don't know anybody else. I don't know who comes to mind first off the other broadcasts across the league. I'm sure there are very good broadcasters everywhere else, but to me, it's that. And he was great at what he did. And it's sad to see the way that he went, because you know, I don't know if something else was at play, but to have an abrupt retirement after 2 weeks into the season, with what he had said, you know, he said he was sick of making the commute to the ballpark. Maybe the new year he said, screw it. But I don't know. Felt like maybe he was trying to give it one more whirl, and it came to the point where he's like, I don't want to do this again. Upsetting, but he had a full life, a full career, a legendary career. And he'll be every Yankees legend who ever came through the doors over the last four decades, threw him props online. This was no joke. Everybody came to shower him with praise when he announced his retirement on social media. So don't make no mistake about that. This guy was legit, and he deserves all the credit.
Yep, 100% correct. Can't dispute any of it. Listen to Sterling call a full game. Go back online and listen to Sterling call Atlanta Hawks basketball in the 80s if you want to hear a weird trip. Because he was
he good Atlanta at basketball?
He was great. Yeah. He's an Atlanta basketball and baseball guy before he came to New York. The internet is forever, so you can listen to it. And we're going to be listening to a lot of John Sterling now, because you're not going to get the fresh ones. A lot of us would go race to the radio when they knew the Yankees had a big win coming up. Ryan Rucco wrote that in his tribute. Like, whenever there are two outs in the ninth of a World Series, you'd go get the radio, listen to Sterling instead of listening to Joe Buck, who's great in his own right, but Sterling was ours. That's what Yankee fans did. If you wanted to hear a big moment get called, you would go to the radio to get the local feed. You would not remember the Joe Buck call, which they were all good. Yankees are back on top, world champions for the 27th time against Philly. Great call, but I'm going to Sterling, and now I can't, and that's sad. Well,
I am wondering, before we sign off here.
No.
And I don't want to jinx it, but if the Yankees make a World Series run, does he come back to broadcast the World Series?
I think he narrates the World Series video.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yankeeography style.
Yeah. Oh, Yankeeography.
Yeah. Well, he made it. Look, he made it into this season for a little bit, right? Yeah. He called some games this year. He's an 85-year-old man turning 86 this summer. He got to do a couple of Yankee games and what could be amount to a special season. I don't know. But if it does, he was a part of it. And if they win it all, he'll do the narration for the World Series video for sure, 100%. So hopefully that'll be his final sign-off instead of just the non demented car, which, again, is what it is. I love it. I still never heard that song in my life, but I do love it. Well, John, we'll see you on Saturday. We'll recap the ceremony when we see you on Monday. Thanks for joining us, 2 o'clock Eastern, every Monday, every Thursday, right here on YouTube Live and on every podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We're here. I'm Adam Weinrib. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weinrib. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
At Tommy's _takes. Find us at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. Please head on over to yanksgoyard.com. We got a ton of content there. Pre-game stuff, post-game stuff, rumors, reports, reactions, opinions. We're having a great time. Thank you guys for reading. Thank you guys for tuning in. Enjoy the Yankees off day. That was a tormenting majority of that series. But we got through it. We got some momentum. Rays coming to town this weekend. Enjoy yourselves. We'll talk to you again on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern live right here, everybody. Take care.
Absolutely. We will be right here. Take care, everybody.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.